a little bit of your background, if you're a native of St. Joseph, and what was the role that you played in this book, Hidden History of St. Joseph County, Michigan?
Well, I am a native of St. Joe County. I've lived there all my life, save a few years in the Boston area. But at a very young age, the age of 11, I got interested in the archaeological aspects of the county and have been studying that for going on 47 years now.
Wow.
So I wrote a chapter in Kelly's book on that subject, and it was they decided to use it as the introduction, which is very fitting. It fits in that role very nicely. In the last probably 15 years, I've been going through my great-great-grandfather's papers from the Talbot House in Centerville, and that has supplied me with primary documents dating back to the county's earliest history, back into the 1830s.
Mm-hmm.
So, got in at the end of the book, kind of jumped in with both feet and contributed. It was a lot of fun.
Archaeology. Did you find like an arrowhead or something as a child, or how did you get into that?
A friend of mine's father worked in soil conservation, and he would come home every night and empty out his pockets, and he had them displayed all over his house. I just thought that was the neatest thing. So he took me out and showed me how to identify the ancient village sites, some of the things to look for, the burnt stone and the heat-fractured rock and such.
And it stuck. Oh, interesting. What about you, Kelly? How did you get interested in history, and how did you get interested in this project?
My husband and I moved to Colon, Michigan, which is in St. Joseph County, about 5 years ago. We lived in Chicago, and I was a librarian for the Chicago Tribune. And when I came to the county, I discovered the St. Joseph County Historical Society, and I decided to volunteer with them. And I got more and more interested in the county when I heard about the unusual things that happened here. I thought it was just going to be a quiet, rural place, but its history is a little strange.
It is. This book is just packed with these quirky little stories. So, and it's called Hidden History. Mm-hmm. Why is it hidden?
Well, there's been lots written about St. Joseph County and about the individual villages and towns like Three Rivers. There are a couple of books on Three Rivers. There's a book on Sturgis. There's a book on Klinger Lake. But there's some things that go beyond just the who did what when. For example, living in Colon, it's the magic capital of the world, and it says so on the signs. But it's not just something that the town made up. The United States Congress has declared Colon the magic capital of the world, and it's in the congressional record as such. And the reason is its connection to magic. Currently, there are three magic manufacturers in Colon, and once a year, Abbott's Magic has its get-together, and people come from all over. And one of the magicians who started the magic business in Colon was Harry Blackstone Sr. Mm. And he was popular around the Midwest. But his most his largest contribution, let's say, to magic is he's the first magician to pull a rabbit out of a hat. And magicians have copied him since then. And they use rabbits and sometimes doves because they're kind of malleable. They're not harmed or anything, so no problem. It's not like using a dog or something. But he did that, and he is buried in the Lakeside Cemetery in Colon, and there are over 30 magicians buried. That's more magicians in one place than anywhere else in the world. And on Halloween, magicians come from around and also throughout the year and place objects on his grave, little stuffed rabbits or coins or whatever. And on Halloween, about 3 years ago, one of our magicians had a call to go out to the cemetery and perform the broken wand ceremony, where they take a magic wand and break it because the magic is gone from the person's death. Well, the magician was called out on Halloween, a rainy, icy evening. It was terrible. And he learned that somebody who was from New Orleans, a magician from New Orleans, who had passed away in New Orleans over the summer, had his will stating that he would be buried in the Colon Cemetery with the other magicians. So what happened to the magician between the time he passed away in New Orleans over the summer, and the cold, rainy, icy Halloween day, I don't know, but he made it, and he's buried amongst the others in the Lakeside Cemetery.
That would be an interesting one to walk through. So it's almost a little bit of not just history, but ghost story
ghost
in there,
stories,
too.
Yes. Oh, yes.
What was your process? How did you go about researching this, finding all of these stories, besides tapping into Tom's head here?
Oh, yes. Well, Tom has spoken a couple of times. In fact, I think, are you speaking in November or
yes.
September? November. At the St. Joseph County Historical Society, we have speakers every month, mm-hmm. and we have fantastic resources about the history of St. Joseph County in Three Rivers, and I looked at the information that we had, the old deeds. Some of the deeds are in terrible shape because they were kidnapped in the latter part of the 18th century. Someone stole all of the deeds from the courthouse and buried them and held them for ransom.
Wow.
And they did that to stop commerce in the county because you couldn't file a claim for a house, sell a house, buy a house or whatever, because there were no records. And eventually, through some gangsters and attorneys, not necessarily one gangster slash attorney, but some gangsters and an attorney.
Important to make that differentiation.
It was decided that county should pay $5,000 to recover the deeds. And they were told to bring the $5,000 and shovels, go out into the countryside, and that's where the deeds were. Well, they had been rained upon. They were muddy. They were eaten by insects. They were in terrible shape. And we have some of those deeds in Three Rivers at the St. Joseph County Historical Society, and they look terrible. Mm-hmm. You wonder, why do these people have these things? But that's why. Well, eventually, St. Joseph County decided that wasn't fair. They didn't really think it was fair to pay $5,000 for their own deeds. So they sued the attorneys and gangsters. And the case actually went up to the United States Supreme Court. And the United States Supreme Court decided, well, you paid the money, you got your deeds, so you don't have a case.
Mm.
So they were recovered. And they're
right, yeah.
They have much better security in the county courthouse now.
I bet they do. They probably ask for more than $5,000 today, too.
Yes.
Either of you or both of you, paint a picture for us of St. Joseph in 1829. What did it look like back then? What would you have found?
There, one of my great-great-grandfathers, John Wilkinson Fletcher, came in mid-1820s and picked out his 80 acres in the wilderness on the prairie, the Nattawaseppe, the prairie on the river. And he returned every year until the land office opened. There was not much there other than Native Americans and wilderness.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's pretty much what it looked like. It was just all wilderness.
Forest.
The prairies, St. Joe County, from an archaeological standpoint, looking back, is made up of about 60% of glacial outwash plains. And that's where the prairies took over. So if you came here in 1820 and staked out your 80 acres on the prairie, there was no clearing of the land. You simply burned it off in the fall or early spring and plowed it.
Okay.
So it was highly sought after.
Mm-hmm.
That made a big hit out east, all the prairie ground and the wheat.
Mm-hmm.
St. Joe County was going to feed the country. So.
Yeah.
In fact, in the 1840s, Daniel Webster, famous New Englander, decided to invest in land in St. Joseph County and bought a mill in Constantine. So it had a reputation. In fact, the land was purchased at the land office, which is in White Pigeon, and that was open for about 4 years. And the land was sold, even parts of Kalamazoo and Grand Rapids, land was sold at this land office. And the St. Joseph County Historical Society owns the land office, and we're continually in the process of preserving the land office. And it looks like, you know, they did a land office business and then they closed because there was no more land to be purchased, and the land office moved farther north.
The land office moved to Kalamazoo, which at that time was called Bronson.
Mm-hmm.
And in St. Joe County, if you go east, you go into the little town of Bronson. So they switched names there.
So you're going to have to write some more history books.
Our family has a letter of Mr. Fletcher when he came. The last year he came to the prairie before the land office opened, he wintered over in a mud hut with his new bride in the wilderness. And Sarah Fletcher.
Was she impressed?
Wrote a letter back to the family the following year, and no, she was not. But these people were tough.
For those of us who have been out of the classroom of American history for a few years, talk to us about who is St. Joseph and how the town got its name.
That was French, I believe, French explorers.
Yeah, he was a saint.
Patron saint.
Did he spend some time there?
Or? No. The St. Joseph River flows through
St. Joseph County
and continues and drains into Lake Michigan. And wherever you go in St. Joseph County, you're near a river, usually the St. Joseph River, but there are other
several tributaries.
Like,
yes.
Three Rivers is named for Three Rivers.
Right.
And there are lots of tiny lakes, beautiful lakes, and it's a great place to go fishing.
And it includes 16 townships?
Mm-hmm.
One of your stories made me smile because I recognized it. My background is ethnically Latvian, and there was a little bit in here about how Long Lake, or Gudazes, as we call it, where I've spent I've spent quite a few of my younger summers there. And so it was interesting to read about some of the longer ago history of Long Lake and the Latvian
Fabius
camp.
Fabius Township, and before it was the Latvian camp, it was a Girl Scout camp, and it was chosen because of its beautiful scenery. It was on a lake, and it was in a few hours' drive from Chicago, so the Girl Scouts went there, but they had a few problems, not by no fault of their own, but the first group of campers had food poisoning and had to return for a while, and then polio broke out, as it did all over the United States. And girls were sent home. And it was purchased by the Latvians in, I think it was 1965.
And it's quite active still to this
day. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Still very much a gathering place for that community.
And they have a great website that shows pictures and describes exactly what it is. And it's in the Latvian language and, incidentally, in English.
So among the other fun stories, there's one in there about fishing for diamonds in a lake, a fish filled with diamonds. Share that one. That one's kind of fun, too.
That was also Fabius County, I believe.
There's a charming photo in there. There's a lot of charming photos in there.
Right,
yeah, they're
right.
In those this rowboat and their beautiful dress and fishing for diamonds, I guess.
Yes,
or
yes.
They don't know.
He thought that there was gold in the lake, and that the fish were filled with diamonds. So he was looking for gold.
Why would he think that?
I don't know. But he was...
Don't think he was quite right.
Perhaps not.
And yet people
perhaps
believed
not.
Him.
And people, well, yes, that's on Corey Lake. And he heard voices telling him where to go with his boat. And he would go out onto Corey Lake. He was naked. I don't know why, but I guess the voices told him to be naked. He had a gun and a dagger, and people complained about him, mostly his lack of attire, although he did wear a silk top hat.
Oh, my.
Yes. And he looked for
We don't get that picture in the book, do we?
No, unfortunately. Or fortunately or unfortunately, I don't know. But in 1911, some boys were digging at Camp Eberhardt in Corey Lake, and they found a chest that belonged to this man, Mr. Thomas, and they found rusty pistols and a watch and a dagger and a hunting knife, but no gold and no diamonds. So if anybody goes out fishing on Corey Lake, look for the big fish filled with diamonds.
And speaking of these photos, there's a lot of fascinating, and drawings of, mm-hmm. of some of the people that you write about. How did you find those? Archives, libraries?
Primarily St. Joseph County Historical Society, but where did you find, where are your pictures from, Tom, from your collection?
From my collection, yes.
You have both got to have some favorite stories or some unusual ones or surprising ones of maybe share some of those and how you found them or how they found you.
Well, being from Colon, my favorite stories are about Colon and, of course, the magic. But there was one story about making pumpkin pies. And in the 1870s, there was a woman named Marion Harlan, and she was the Martha Stewart of the day. She wrote several books on entertaining, how to set a table, how to bake a pumpkin pie, and housewives apparently would thumb through her pages before they would cook a pie or set a table. And she had some dubious advice, like how to stop bleeding should you cut your finger while you're making a pumpkin pie. And she says to bind the cut with cobwebs and brown sugar pressed onto lint, or if you don't have cobwebs and sugar, hopefully you have a tidy house and you have no cobwebs.
I was thinking,
you could
yeah.
use a fine dust of tea, and then when the blood ceases to flow, you can apply laudanum, which is opium. So I don't know how many housewives have opium
on
hand.
Yeah.
But she gave away her secret for making the best pumpkin pie. Her secret was a fine yellow powder that she says looks like a box of tooth powder, because they didn't have toothpaste. They had powder, and you put it on sort of like baking soda.
Mm-hmm.
And there was one ingredient that she insisted she used solely. It was pumpkin flour, but it was pumpkin flour that came from Colon, Michigan. In particular, it was from the Alden Fruit Factory. And in 1874, there were 35 migrant workers who picked pumpkins from all over the county. They used the secret Alden process of making pumpkin flour, and it was pretty good business for Colon, that everybody in the country was buying pumpkin flour from Colon for their Thanksgiving pumpkin pies.
What about you, Tom?
Well, I had a story. It didn't make the book, but this is how Kelly and I met, actually. She came to one of my history talks, and the story was who actually was the founder of Centerville. And in Centerville, we celebrate Thomas Langley and the Langley Covered Bridge. And But truth be known, the property was owned by a lady by the name of Electra Dean. And she wanted to make her 80 acres in the wilderness worth a little more money. So she gave power of attorney to a young surveyor by the name of Robert Clark Jr. And daunted him with the task of convincing the commissioners to plot the county seat on or adjoining her property. And I can't remember exactly how it was worded, but he was given permission to coerce them with anything necessary. And it worked. And then the land was plotted out on Electra Dean's property, hence Dean Street and Clark Street on each side of the courthouse. Thomas Langley came along the following year and bought it. But, yeah, Electra Dean was actually, in my opinion, the founder. You liked that story.
Mm-hmm,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. And Centerville is the county seat. So there's a courthouse and the jails, and that's where you go for filing all your papers.
And, again, I found that information in a document out of the Talbot House, a treasure trove.
A fun find, yeah.
Documents.
Yeah. So what's the benefit of knowing our history? We don't seem to learn much from it, but what's the benefit? Why should we know our history?
Well, for example, driving up 131 this morning to get to Kalamazoo, I looked at the road signs and thought, oh, that was named for so-and-so, and he did such-and-such. And going around to the different lakes, well, why are there some lakes with some names? Like Colon has Long Lake. Makes sense because it's long. We have Sturgeon Lake. There are no sturgeon in Sturgeon Lake, but I thought about that. And every time I go to Sturgis or to the Historical Society in Three Rivers, it's a much more interesting drive instead of thinking, oh, it's another 10 minutes.
So it gives you a deeper appreciation for where you
Absolutely.
Are.
Absolutely.
Well, I think everybody should make an attempt to find out where they came from. When I was little, I thought everybody knew all about their family history as we did, and that's not the case. But yeah, we have our family history going back into the late 1700s, back
neat.
Into Ireland. And,
it's
fascinating. And my children don't seem to be real interested now, but there'll come a time in their lives that they'll ask, where did I come from? Who is my ancestor?
That tends to come later,
like?
I think. Yeah,
yeah, and it did for me.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's very important that I have that information for them. So.
Anything you'd like to add? Projects that you're working on now?
Myself, I'm working on I'm co-authoring a paper with Dr. Henry Wright. He's a professor of archaeology and a curator of the Museum of Anthropology up to University of Michigan. And the paper is on an assemblage of artifacts that I found in St. Joseph County that date back to Clovis Enterline. And I'm sure some of the listeners would be familiar with the famed Clovis Point made by Paleolithic man for hunting mastodon and mammoth. Enterline is thought to predate Clovis by, if only, a couple hundred years. So be it. But The estimated date is about 13,700 years.
Wow.
The paper will be published in Paleo America out of Texas A&M as part of their Who Are the First Americans series. I've been working with Dr. Wright out of my home office and up to the research wing at the museum at U of M, and it's been a real experience.
I bet.
I'm really looking forward to this. So.
Yeah. What about you, Kelly? What are you working on now?
Well, I'm a correspondent for the Sturgis Journal, so I'm always writing about things happening in the county. The next thing that's happening is there's a historic home. It's on the National Registry called Farron Hall, and it's been purchased by a chef from Chicago who's going to have gourmet dinners and also open for weddings and things like that. So he's coming back to the area soon, and I'll be touring the Farron Hall.
Well, thank you so much, both of you, for making the drive and coming up to talk with us.
Well, thank you.
Thank you very much for having us.